Mean kai mirani.
This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Americans including Paul Whelan, Alsu Kurmasheva, and Evan Gershkovich were freed from Russian prisons on Thursday in a historic deal. Jessica Jarrett has the story.
U.S. President Joe Biden.
Today we're bringing home Paul, Evan, Alsu, Vladimir. Three American citizens and one American green card holder. All four have been imprisoned unjustly in Russia.
Among those headed home from Russian prisons, journalists Evan Gershkovich, Alsu Kurmasheva, and former U.S. Marine Paul Whelan, and Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist Vladimir Karamurza. In total, months of negotiations secured the release of 16 people, including five wrongfully detained Germans and seven Russian citizens, in return for eight Russians held in the U.S., Germany, Poland, Norway, and Slovenia. Jessica Jarrett, VOA News.
The U.S. government on Thursday announcing it's recognizing the opposition candidate as the winner of Venezuela's presidential election, despite the country's electoral authority giving the victory to President Nicolas Maduro. KP's Norman Hall has that story.
The U.S. government has recognized Venezuelan opposition candidate Edmundo Gonzalez as the winner of the South American country's presidential election, discrediting the results announced by electoral authorities who declared President Nicolas Maduro the victor. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says there's overwhelming evidence that Gonzalez won the most votes in the July 28th contest. A Brazilian government official says officials from his country, Colombia, and Mexico have asked Maduro's administration to show the vote tally sheets from Sunday's election and allow impartial verification. I'm Norman Hall.
Kamala Harris will be confirmed as the Democratic U.S. presidential nominee in an electronic vote that started on Thursday, replacing the fanfare of in-person balloting that usually kicks off the party's national convention. This is VOA News. Police fired tear gas to disperse crowds of protesters in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, on Thursday as thousands rallied across several cities over an escalating cost of living and governance issues. We get more on the story from Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo.
Reuters video showed people marching across Africa's most populous nation to show discontent with economic reforms that have led to rampant inflation and inflicted increasing hardship on ordinary Nigerians. In Lagos, armed police watched as protesters marched towards the government house before heading to two locations that were authorized for the protest. Some shopping malls in the city were shut and guarded by a heavy police presence.
We are tired of being hungry. We cannot even feed our children.
Consumer inflation in Nigeria rose to a new 28-year high of 34.19% in annual terms in June.
Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo. Separatist rebels in northern Mali said Thursday they killed dozens of fighters from the Russian mercenary group Wagner and government troops near the Algerian border at the end of July. Wagner spearheaded some of the Kremlin's longest and bloodiest military campaigns in Ukraine until a short-lived rebellion against the Russian government. It is now active in Africa. South Africa's Red Cross said on Thursday it is willing to provide humanitarian aid to the flood hit north. AP correspondent Charles De La Desma reports.
The Secretary General of South Korea's Red Cross, Park Jong-sul, says his organization is willing to provide necessary supplies and is also ready to discuss items, scales and methods with North Korea's Red Cross, adding, we expect a swift response from the north. North Korean state media said on Wednesday the recent heavy rains had left over 4,000 houses, over 7,000 acres of agricultural fields and numerous other public buildings, structures, roads and railways flooded in the northwest. The north has not yet reported details about casualties. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The war in Sudan and restrictions on aid deliveries have caused famine in at least one site in North Darfur and have likely led to famine conditions in other parts of the conflict region, a committee of flood security experts said in a report on Thursday. The finding, linked to an internationally recognized standard known as the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, is just the third time a famine classification has been made since the system was set up 20 years ago. For details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website, that is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. Today is Friday, August 2nd, and here are some of the stories we're covering. China expands its imports of semi-processed agriculture from Africa.
Since May, when the combat started, the war started in El Fasher and Zamzam, the situation is quite critical. In El Fasher, we have been bombed 10 times and changed medical structures. Now we are only supporting the Saudi hospital, which is the only public hospital remaining in El Fasher, a town for 500,000 people.
The International Medical Humanitarian Organization, Doctors Without Borders, urges Sudan's warring parties to ensure the health and safety of civilians.
This is a civil society organization. It is their responsibility to call attention to the country's problems, so the military will respect its commitment to return the country to civilian rule on December 31st this year.
And in Guinea, a group of civil society organizations ends its three-day demonstrations in Conakry. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The International Medical Humanitarian Organization, Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, has urged Sudan's warring parties to respect healthcare facilities and civilians and to allow the urgent delivery of food and medicines to the area. MSF, in a press release, said that repeated attacks on healthcare facilities in Al Fasher, the capital of South Sudan's North Darfur state, are causing the already heavy death toll in the city to rise. This even further, while the ongoing blockage of urgently needed medical supply trucks is putting even more lives at risk. For more on the situation in Sudan, I reached MSF's Sudan Program Manager, Stefano Dion.
Yes, so Zamzam is a camp just south of El Fasher, and we have assessed a very critical nutritional situation back in January and March. And basically, we are responding there with medical and nutritional program. And same goes in El Fasher town, where we are supporting a Saudi hospital. Since May, when the combat started, the war started in El Fasher and Zamzam, situation is quite critical. In El Fasher, we have been bombed 10 times and changed medical structures. Now we are only supporting the Saudi hospital, which is the only public hospital remaining in El Fasher, a town for 500,000 people, and which has been hit this weekend. In the camps, situation is quite critical. There is high level of malnutrition. And right now, we are in a difficult situation because we have difficulty in supplying our programs with life-saving nutritional and medical items. We sent two trucks for that 6 weeks ago, and since 4 weeks, they are blocked by RSF in Cap Kabir. And we need these two trucks to make refurbishment, otherwise we'll start to cut some items of the programs. We might, you know, stop treating moderate malnutrition. We had to change some antibiotic like amoxicillin for others because we are running short of amoxicillin. And we need these two trucks and further trucks in order to ensure that we have continued supplies to maintain our project.
The two warring parties seem nowhere near reaching some compromise. How do you work in that kind of situation?
So it's quite difficult because in El Fasher, the situation is very dangerous when there is a war because medical structure has been bombed multiple times. In Zamzam, the situation that is very difficult is for the supply. I mean, right now, we could have agreement with the government to use the Tine border from Chad, but they refuse that we use a route that might be more practical through Adre, and that's a problem. And once we enter, there is some RSF area to be crossed, whether from Tine or from Adre. And we have problem in passing with the truck as we are experiencing presently with the two trucks that are currently blocking Cap Kabir.
Do you have any protection from either party?
So we are respected by other parties, but our experience is that they don't spare medical structure. When there is fighting, we cannot say that there is an intention to target medical structure, but there is no intention to spare them during the practice of war. So when you are caught into both fire, situation is quite dangerous. So because of this, we had to reduce our activity in El Fasher, and for the same reason, we had to temporarily suspend the presence of our team in Khartoum for the Turkish hospital.
Stefano Dion is MSF Sudan program manager. He spoke with us from Paris, France. In Guinea, a group of civil society organizations says its three-day demonstration in Conakry has been a success and will now end. The demonstration was called to urge the military government to return the country to democratic rule at the end of the year and free two activists detained in mid-July. Security forces and angry youth for the last 2 days have fought for control of the streets on the outskirts of the capital, Conakry. Reporter Karim Kamara has more from Conakry.
At Amdale Pharmacy, a neighborhood on the outskirts of Conakry, hungry youth took to the street early Thursday, mounting roadblocks and touching tires. Issa Kaba explains their grievances. He says their rights have been taken. He says there is no freedom of expression, even as journalists. Ba says there is no freedom of movement, and the demonstration today has been peaceful, so no one can stop them. Police spokesman Mori Kaba warns demonstrators will be arrested for disruptive actions. He says there are still some problems along the roads and that anyone caught throwing stones or disturbing public peace will be arrested. Kaba also says the police have called in special intervention units to maintain order. The protests were organized by several activist groups known as the Dynamic of Kenyan Civil Society Organizations. One of the organizers, Alpha Bayo, explains why they decided to ignore the ban on the demonstration. This is a civil society organization. It is their responsibility to call attention to the country's problems so the military will respect its commitment to return the country to civilian rule on December 31st this year. This is nothing they have seen assures them that the junta will respect its commitment to end its rule this year. Edward Zutomo, an opposition leader, blames the current situation on the Economic Community of West African State, or ECOWAS.
ECOWAS has been absent from Guinea for over a year now. We don't even know if they're planning to come back. So as long as it is like that, to me, they can probably even stay there, because it's been a year, nothing is happening. So what are they going to come to do now? We are denouncing them because we want them to change the way they're doing things.
In a communique on Thursday, the organizing groups thanked those who answered the call to demonstrate. The statement condemns what it calls excessive force by security forces on demonstrators. The organizing group said security forces have arrested four of their members and blamed the security forces for the death of 10 demonstrators. Most of the members of the civil society Dynamic have gone into hiding for fear of arrest. The state prosecutor on Monday threatened to charge the organizers in court if they ignored the ban on demonstrations. Businesses have remained closed throughout the demonstration in the opposition strongholds on the outskirts of Conakry, disrupting daily economic activity. For VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
China is expanding its imports of semi-processed agriculture from Africa. The move is an effort to address a trade imbalance and also a way of diversifying global food chains amid geopolitical tensions. Kate Bartlett visits South Africa's rural Limpopo province, where farmers are getting ready to export their products to the Chinese market for the first time.
This fruit is so valuable, it's been dubbed green gold, and it's destined for China.
At the end of the BRICS summit last year, the deal was signed to export avocados to China. So we now have access to China. But there's been a big process in between to meet all the requirements of the protocol that was agreed to. and we're very close now to being able to send the first shipment to China.
Derek Duncan is the CEO of a South African Fruit Growers Association and has been working with Chinese inspectors to open so-called green lanes to get avocado exports off the ground. China has long been the African continent's biggest trade partner, but the Asian giant exports some $60 billion more in goods to Africa each year than it imports. In South Africa's case, China exported $11 billion more than it imported in 2022, the most recent year for which figures are available.
Because there's been a strong impetus from the Chinese as well to make sure that this deal happens, because they're aware of that trade imbalance and that they need to be taking more exports from South Africa.
South Africa also exports its agricultural produce to the EU and US, which are its third and fourth largest markets respectively, behind the African continent and China. Many of South Africa's agricultural products benefit from tariff-free access to the U.S. market under Washington's African Growth and Opportunity Act. The avocado deal with Beijing was made last year when South Africa hosted Chinese President Xi Jinping on a state visit alongside the summit of the BRICS Group of Emerging Economies. At the time, South Africa urged China to address the trade deficit. Experts say China is also expanding its imports of semi-processed agriculture from Africa to ensure food security and avoid price inflation. Lauren Johnston is an associate professor of China Studies at the University of Sydney.
Another kind of bigger geostrategic reason for the push on food exports is similar to kind of diversify the global agricultural supply chain. You know, you've had this pressure on China. You've got the soybean pressure from the US. You've got different pressures and trade tensions between Australia and China.
As part of its agricultural push in Africa, China also imports soybeans, citrus, wine and rooibos tea from South Africa, avocados and tea from Kenya, and coffee from Rwanda and Ethiopia. China's new ambassador to South Africa, Wu Peng, has promised measures are being taken to speed up the export of more agricultural products to China. The potential of this is huge, says Clive Garrett, marketing manager for ZZ2, a South African farming conglomerate which will soon be exporting its avocados to China.
Until October in 2023, South Africa really could only export to Europe, a little bit to the Middle East. But now, since then, we've had Japan, China and India open to us. And these are very exciting markets because the per capita consumption in these markets is still incredibly low. So we see huge opportunities of going into these markets.
According to industry estimates, there are some 300 million people in China earning enough to buy imported fruit. That can only be good news for farmers and workers here in this bucolic mountain town. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Tzaneen, Limpopo, South Africa.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Friday, August 2nd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson Omale Sports. The recent protests in Kenya that forced the president to dissolve his cabinet have been led by people under 27 years old, members of so-called Generation Z, many of whom identify as tribeless and classless. The nationwide protests are largely organized on social media with no notable leaders. They have snowballed into a movement calling for good governance with broad backing across Kenya. So, who are these Generation Z protesters? Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi.
These have been the scenes in the streets of Nairobi and across Kenya for the past 2 months. Young people leading demonstrations to call for good governance. Government data show about 3/4 of Kenya's population is under 35 years old. Wanjiru Gikonyo is an expert on what she calls transformative governance in Nairobi.
And what they said is they realized there is no one to speak for them.
Most of the protesters are part of Generation Z, born in 1997 and later. Their protests were sparked by a contentious tax bill that President William Ruto later withdrew. But protesters say the president has to step down as well. 26-year-old Kasmuel Mark Oure has been in the forefront of the protests. He says the Ruto must go call is not an attack on Ruto personally, but a call for good governance.
It is the Ruto-isms, the isms that have been associated with him, the corruption that bedevils his government, the cronyism, the sheer incompetence of the people who surround him in government, the sheer number of unconstitutional offices that have been we've had to endure in his tenure, the extrajudicial killings, the excesses of the police. In a country where we're living, where we have a police force and not a police service, Ruto Must Go is a clarion call to a better Kenya.
Ruto dissolved his cabinet on July 11 and reconstituted it to include members of the main opposition party. Speaking last week in Mombasa County, he pledged to tackle the main accusation against his government.
I will mobilize resources that are available. I will mobilize every resource that's available to deal with the challenge of corruption.
But critics say the new cabinet, which has half of the fired ministers back in office, does not inspire hope. Recent polls show over 80% of Kenyans support the youth-led protests. Wanjiru says this is because the protesters spoke to the feelings of many Kenyans.
Kenya is in a bad situation. Our political leaders do not reflect our aspirations. And the young people have come and spoken to our aspirations. So really what we are seeing by these shop owners and business owners and parents who are supporting their young people is these young people have captured our aspiration.
Analysts say to bring about real change, the youth-led movement has to organize politically and collaborate with other progressive political groups. Protester Leon Mushiri agrees.
It's high time the youth young people come together and say that we have identified certain individuals from all over the 47 counties, and we have come together and we're saying that this is the opportunity for us also to go on the ballot come 2027.
President Ruto says the government will not allow further protests in the country, saying, quote, enough is enough. But activists note the right to peaceful protest is guaranteed in the constitution, and protesters like Mark Oure are defiant. They are planning a major demonstration in Nairobi on August 8th. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
In a U.S. election season that has been filled with unexpected twists and turns, social media users have responded in kind with coconuts and cat ladies. VOA's Tina Trina explains.
What do coconuts, childless cat ladies, and English pop star Charlie XCX have in common? They're all part of the online conversation when it comes to the U.S. presidential election. With just over 3 months until Election Day, voters are encountering social media feeds filled with memes and rhetorical mudslinging.
We're effectively run in this country via the Democrats, via our corporate oligarchs, by a bunch of childless cat ladies who are miserable at their own lives and the choices that they've made, and so they want to make the rest of the country miserable too.
Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance's past comment on Democratic lawmakers has gone viral, with plenty of cat-filled memes and videos rebuking it. Everyone from former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to Hollywood actress Jennifer Aniston has criticized Vance, who says the comment was taken out of context and that Democratic policies are anti-family. Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris's campaign is playing on a speech from last year to provide context in its own tongue-in-cheek way, quoting advice from her mother.
You think you just fell out of a coconut tree? You exist in the context of all in which you live and what came before you.
Originally posted in mockery by the Republican National Committee, the quote has since been repurposed by Harris supporters into memes and coconut emojis on social media. Harris's recent entry into the race has generated considerable buzz online, including an endorsement from pop star Charlie XCX, who declared on X that Kamala is brat, the name of her latest album, and a reference to the metaphorical it girl of the moment. In response, the Harris campaign adopted the album's lime green color and lowercase font for its profile page on X, while content creators remixed the pop artist's songs with Harris's coconut tree reference. In an election season that's been full of surprises, social media users are keeping pace. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Douglas. We begin the sport with the latest Paris 2024 Olympic Games news, as just three African countries, South Africa, Tunisia and Egypt, currently feature on the Paris Olympic medal table. But that's all set to change as track actions get underway in the French capital on Friday. The first rounds of the men's 1,500 meters and women's 100, 800 meters and 5,000 meters will see numerous African stars in action, with one medal event scheduled for the Friday evening session. That's the men's 10,000 meters final, where Ethiopia's Solomon Barega will be looking to successfully defend the title he won in Tokyo 3 years ago. In winning gold, Barega continued a fine legacy of Ethiopian champions in the event, which has been won by the East African nation on five occasions before Barega's gold, starting with Meros Yufar in 1980 and then the great Haile Gebrselassie in 1996 and 2000, and then Kenenisa Bekele in 2004 and 2008. Also gunning for gold at the Start of France track on Friday will be Uganda's world record holder Joshua Cheptegei, who is making his debut over 10,000 meters this season. He has won three world titles at this distance, but never an Olympic gold, having to settle for silver behind Barega in Tokyo. Meanwhile, Thursday saw the 20-kilometer walk taking place in steamy conditions, with Ethiopia's Miss Guyana Wakuma setting a new national record of 1 hour, 19 minutes, 31 seconds. And now to Nigeria, where the Federal Ministry of Sports is set to wield its hammer on the Athletics Federation of Nigeria over the omission of one of Nigeria's medal hopeful, Favour Ofili, in the women's 100 meters event at the ongoing 2024 Paris Olympics. The athlete had voiced her anger and frustration on social media when she learned that she wasn't going to participate in the event which she had qualified for. Ofili qualified for the women's 100 meters during the AFN national trials, which was held in June. She had a new personal best of 11.06 seconds to secure her first national title as well. In April, she hit the Olympics 200 meters mark at the Tom Jones Memorial Classic with a time of 22.33 seconds. The AFN, in its defense, had said it can't explain her omission, while insisting she was registered for the 100 meters, 200 meters, and the women's 4x100 meters relay. South Africa's Tatjana Smith confirmed her retirement on Thursday after winning Olympic silver in the 200 meters breaststroke, saying she may not even look at the pool for the next 10 years. The 27-year-old came to Paris as a defending champion, but was edged into silver by American Kate Douglas. Smith won the 100 meters breaststroke title earlier this year and said it was time to hang up the googles. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Douglas, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, August 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for joining us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
VOA Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world in its news summaries. Africa in brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.